Welcome into Myths, the round table. We're talking undervalued and overvalued players in ADP 76 through 150. We're going to use the NFBC ADP tonight. You guys can find that online. Just Google NFBC ADP. Super easy. Joining me tonight, Colin Weatherwax.
How's it going, guys?
Hey, Colin. Colin is at CWeatherwax13 on Twitter. He's got a lot of stuff going on right now. The Dirt Dogs pod is just getting done their second half of the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational team review. A little bit of a bone to pick with you, Colin. You know, you guys didn't talk me up at all when you went through League 9.
You know, if we didn't talk you up, that could either be a great thing, or it could just near in the middle of the pack and you won't do anything special in this league.
Right. Yeah, it's a tough league. There's definitely a lot of good players. And Colin also has articles coming out on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. He put out his all-bust article today. And he's also going to be getting into the NFBC main event. So good luck with that, Colin.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I don't know what I'm getting into, but it's going to be a great experience.
All right. And then also joining us, Evan Peterson. Evan is at EVFWFB on Twitter. How you doing, Evan?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. I was really excited to participate in this. It's not very often in podcasting you get to be a part of like new and fun things, and this is definitely a new format. So thanks for putting this together.
You got it. And then as always, JR Fenton at JohnRussell215 on Twitter. How we doing, JR?
What's up, Mike? I'm doing good. Glad to be back again. Just like Evan said, this is one of the funnest formats for podcasts for fantasy baseball. So I'm just stoked to be here again.
Yeah, I'm liking it so far. You know, we don't want to get bogged down and talk every single player in the top 100 or anything like that. And, you know, bringing on different people and having their perspective of who they think is undervalued when you really only get to plug a couple guys, I find really interesting. But to explain the format, if you haven't listened before, we're going to have three rounds. The first round, everybody's going to throw out an undervalued player. They're going to say why they think they're undervalued, and we'll rebut them a little bit. Two of our guests are going to move on to the second round, where we're going to have a toss-up on Paul DeJong. And then the winner of that is going to move on and tell us who they think is overvalued out of this ADP range. All right, Colin, start us off. Who do you think is an undervalued?
Yeah, so my guy is actually Ozzie Albies, and a lot of people might think that he's being overdrafted, being that he only played a couple months last year, but I really love his talent. I think he's going to have a breakout season. I have no problem taking him in the top 100. I might even push him up as high as, you know, an 80th overall, kind of like it happened in the TGFBI. Paul Sporer took him 75th overall. So being that the second base position is a little bit weak, in my opinion, I don't understand the Javi Baez hype. I don't know why he's going 20 picks ahead of Ozzie Albies. But the Atlanta Braves lineup in general is very underrated. They built a park for Freddie Freeman's left-handed power, and I think that's going to play well for Ozzie Albies to, you know, hit a little bit more home runs than what he did in the minors. And also, he's going to run the base paths like no one else in that division, I think. So getting him as a top 100 player, I think it could pay dividends. I think he could be a top 50 overall player. He's going to have high average, you know, 10 to 20 home runs powers, and then also provide, you know, elite steals, which is something we can't say about a lot of guys going into this year.
Yeah, we know power is scarce. Definitely interested in Albies. You know, not a lot of tape on the guy yet. But the one thing I found really interesting was I saw on Twitter from Mike Petriello. He said that guys that were 20 years old and had the WRC plus that Albies had in 244 plate appearances last year in the last 30 years have been Rafael Devers, Carlos Correa, Bryce Harper twice, Mike Trout, Hayward, Stanton, A-Rod, Ken Griffey Jr. Like, that's a hell of a list to be a part of.
Yeah, I agree. And you kind of further my point. You know, being the second base is, you know, very at the top. There's the Daniel Murphy injury. There's the Jonathan Scope hype, just, we already know he's going to regress based on his breakout last year. And then, like I said about Javi Baez, so getting Albies in the 128 range, which is his ADP right now on NFBC, you know, that's a guy that I want to take the risk on because I need players like that in my lineup that could provide that huge value that we need from this eighth, ninth round pick. And so, you know, he provides in the batting average. He doesn't have a weakness, in my opinion. You know, he is young, like everyone's been saying. He hasn't shown it besides those 244 plate appearances, but he can provide that average. He can provide elite skills, steals, I mean. And then also with the home run power, you know, that we saw last year in baseball, he could just hop right on that train and possibly hit 20 home runs.
Evan, JR, you guys want to rebut that at all?
No, I mean, why would you want to rebut anything on Ozzie Albies? I mean, the guy's a future superstar in the making. You read the Petriello list, which is like seven studs and Jason Hayward. I mean, it's a great list to be on. He sticks out like a sore thumb on the ADP sheet because he's just not falling that far in drafts. And I know Colin's got his little addiction to drafting, and you know, the rest of us are fairly degenerate when it comes to our fantasy habits. He's not going pick 120 in any draft. And I think his low pick in the Invitational was like 101. Even then, I don't really think people can expect to get him once you cross into the triple digits. And there's a reason why everybody's high on him. If you think Freddie Freeman is going to be this MVP candidate, Albies is probably going to hit in front of him and is probably going to score a ton of runs. And if, you know, Ender Inciarte has the big year that everybody thinks he's going to have, like, Albies, just by, you know, putting the pieces of the puzzle together, has to, you know, be a superstar. And that's what people are drafting him based on.
It wasn't Seven Studs and Jason Hayward the name of the 2016 Cubs World Series DVD?
Yeah. I think it was 24 studs and then Jason Hayward.
And Hayward's single was called Grounder to Second Base, I think was what his solo was called. Yeah. But, I mean, seriously, why are people going nuts to draft Rougned Odor when this kid is on the board? Like, come on, let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I owned him at the end of the year last year. I was pretty happy with the production I got. So, you know, obviously the downside is youth and lack of experience. But anything past 100, like there's fleas on all those dogs. So you're not going to get much resistance on Albies in this room, Colin. All right, moving on to Evan. Evan, who do you have for us as an undervalue?
So in the undervalued department, I figured we could talk about Kyle Seager, and I know he's not really a sexy pick. And, I mean, it's kind of weird to say that you're not going to get any oohs and ahs out of Kyle Seager when you draft him like 130. You might have somebody go, oh yeah, you know, the hate's gone a little too far on him. He's a consistent lock to hit 25 bombs if he's on the field for an entire year. And he's played 155 games or more in five of the last six seasons. And the year he didn't do that, he got to 154. The dude is just always on the field. The lineup gets a nice little bump with D. Gordon at the top. And so, you know, provides a pretty positive climate for counting statistics. So once again, you look at the ADP range, and why am I more excited to draft Miguel Sano, Joey Gallo, Jake Lamb, Eduardo Nunez? I mean, just because he was overhyped last year and people probably paid a little too much for him and then ended up getting burnt doesn't mean he can't be a good asset for your team this year. And you can't really, you know, hold that valuation against him. And that's what I think a lot of people are doing.
Yeah, it was odd. You know, last year his ADP was pushing into the 80s and 70s. And it was because, you know, he's such a solid player, a consistent player. And he didn't give anyone that consistency last year. But even if he had, I feel like people would have probably been disappointed with him because preseason you think like, oh, I want that consistent player. But it's never an exciting ride. And when you're drafting a guy in the top 100, like that's what you want. You want the guy that you know, it makes you feel all warm and fuzzy. Downside to Seager is obviously that he's not gonna he's not going to win you a league. He's a nice, consistent player, like you said, but he's never going to really get you more than 3 or 4 home runs in a month. You know, a dozen runs, a dozen RBIs each month. Like, those are nice stats, but they're not going to set you apart from the pack. So that's my take on Seager. What do you have?
I mean, we got to get JR in here too, but the one thing I'll say is I understand that everybody wants to draft hints of upside. You want a ability for your pick to outproduce what you paid for him, but there is something to be said about getting the exact value that you paid for him. And when you're paying a, 10th round pick in a 12 team league or whatever it is, then you know, there's something to the value that he's just flat out going to give you as long as he's on the field.
All right, JR, anything to add there?
I love Kyle. I've owned him a couple years now. 2015, I think, was the first year I got him. But that year he had around 630 ABs. He's never come really close to that since. And last year we saw 570 at-bats. So we saw a lot of counting stats drop a little bit. The RBIs especially, the OPS as well. I mean, I'm really like Kyle where he's going right now. I'd like to get him even later. I didn't want to bring him up because I don't want people drafting him. I hope he falls to me. I think 30 home runs and 85 to 90 is right in line with him. And it's like you said, you don't need him to be that guy who's coming in and carrying your team. What I need from him is every week or every 2 weeks, a home run or two, give me some RBIs and just give me a batting average right around 255 to 270, somewhere in that range. And that's solid for my starting third baseman. I'll take that all day.
Yeah, I will admit he was a target of mine coming into the Invitational because I thought he was going to be slept on. 138 is his NFBC ADP, and there's names in front of him that are scary. So not the worst spot to get a guy that you can count on, put it in the hot corner, and forget about. All right, so then JR, who do you got as an undervalue for the range?
My undervalue guy, I think I actually hinted on him last week in the podcast, is Marwin Gonzalez. Not only is he first, second, short, and outfield eligible, but he plays all over the diamond. I mean, we could even see him getting some spots at third this year if something happens. But you're going to get locked in at 25 to 28 home runs. You're getting 100 RBIs, and you're getting around a 300 batting average. Now, he's going right around 115. If you look at the guys who are going ahead of him, it was mentioned earlier by Colin, Javier Baez is going at 101. Javier Baez is not good, in my opinion. I don't think I want him on any team. Domingo Santana is going at ADP at 90 right now. I don't even think he's getting a full-time playing job. Why would he go there? Yasuo Puig going at 111. I mean, all these guys that I'm naming are going to have stats that are projected, but they're just projections. You know with Marwin, you're getting these numbers. You're going to get a 300 batting average and 80 runs. And from a guy that you can flip all around in your lineup, that's invaluable, especially in weekly leagues.
He can't give me anything at catcher, JR, so I'm not sure how flexible he really is.
Oh, not yet he can't. Until Evan Gattis goes down, then we'll see.
Right. Obviously that being able to plug anywhere in your lineup is a really nice thing to have, and you don't typically get that in this ADP range. You get that like in the 200s where there's a guy who's a super sub and he doesn't get everyday playing time. But with Marwin, like even before Yuli Gurriel had the hand surgery, like he was probably playing, 4 or 5 days a week at least. So, that injury solidifies him into the lineup, at least in the short term. You know, when Gurriel comes back, I guess there could be a little bit of a concern that he becomes more of a part-time player, but if he plays like he did last year, I'm not sure that happens. I guess the other argument against Marwin would be, we've really only seen it for one season. It kind of came out of nowhere, this production from him. Part of that could be he hasn't really played consistently before last year. What would you say if somebody said they were concerned that, it's a flash in the pan, JR?
I would think that, but with all the positive things going for him, with now starting full-time, with being in a loaded lineup, with having multiple positions, and his ceiling to me is probably right about where he is, maybe a little bit higher. But with all four of those factors, I think he needs to be bumped up in his ADP at least 10 to 15 spots. I mean, there's no way in my right mind I would take Javier Baez before him and plug Baez in at second base when I could have Marwin right there.
Oh, I would.
Why?
I mean, okay, and I completely understand, you know, Marwin getting a full-time job now, and maybe, you know, it affects how he plays differently, but I'm not really expecting Marwin Gonzalez to hit 20 home runs next year. I think Baez is probably, like, he's got more pop than Marwin. Like, if one of them hits 25 home runs, it's probably Javier Baez. If one of them steals 20 bases, once again, I think it's Javi Baez. And I understand, you know, they're both in pretty good lineups, so that's, like, kind of cancels each other's out. But, I mean, I can go through the stats on Marwin and tell you why he needs a ton of luck to repeat what he did last year as far as home runs off of right-handed pitching that weren't classified as pull balls. His coming into last year, he had a .233 batting average with runners on base. And last year he hit .335 with runners on base and drove in 80 runs, which was about 20 less than what he'd done his entire career up to that. The home run to fly ball rate off right-handed pitching was double what he had done coming into 2017. Once you start saying he needs to repeat this needs to happen again, the playing time needs to be there, which I think will be, but once again, it's just another thing to add onto the fire. Like, I get that the positional flexibility is a plus, but I mean, I think we need to be realistic about Marwin Gonzalez putting together another, you know, flirting with 25 home run season.
So, Evan, do you trust the players that are going before him that I kind of threw out earlier, the Puigs, the Odors, the Baez, the Domingo Santanas, do you trust that they're going to get to the numbers that they put up last year better than what Marwin could do?
Yeah, as far as like just pure talent, and like I understand that players can turn corners, but when you take a look at what he'd done in his career and kind of the luck factors, maybe I just want to see it again. Like, Baez has sucked for 2 years, but he's been a 2020 candidate and he's put the statistics up. If, you know, he does, if Madden gets in his head about changing his plate approach to get on the field more, I don't think, like, I understand Ian Happ is a roadblock to playing time. I understand that the Cubs lineup is a roadblock to some playing time potentially for Baez, but I think his glove's going to keep him in the lineup more than it's going to take him out. And his, like I said, when he can swing and miss all he wants, but if he's tattooing it when he gets it on there, he's going to be fine. And I mean, how many home runs would you put in over under for Marwin Gonzalez realistically this year?
I have him penciled in around 28 to 30 home runs myself, but I'm also giving him over 500 plate appearances because I think he's going to reach that.
That's very aggressive.
So I kind of want to hop on Ed's train. He provided all stats that, you know, about Marwin Gonzalez, but I kind of want to play an MLB role. He's on a World Series contending team, and like Evan said, this might just be a flash in the pan. The only thing that I can count on with him is going to be the runs if he gets those plate appearances that you're expecting. The problem with the Astros is if he starts to struggle, they have guys like Derek Fisher that can throw in the outfield, like Yuli Gurriel that they can put back at first base whenever he's healthy, like Kyle Tucker, who's lighting up spring training right now, who's the uber prospect, who will just come in. They already know what they're going to get with the bat. And with Marwin, he has the positional flexibility, which I love taking in a draft and hold league, just in case, you know, there's a lot of off days and he can just plug in a lot of positions for me. But at his ADP, I'm with Evan here. I'm going to go with some of the guys that you mentioned earlier. Probably not Javi Baez, but I do like Santana at his price. I do like Ozzie Albies going in front of him. So I'm just worried about this being a flash in the pan for Marwin.
So I got 2 points on Marwin. The first one, so we talked about this last week with Andrews. We're in the juice ball era. I think, you know, there's so many guys, it's going to be so interesting to see who continues that step forward they took in the last year to year and a half. You know, guys like Lomo, Yonder Alonso, Andrews, so many guys that are hitting fly balls that are turning into home runs that weren't prior. So that's kind of one thing in the back of my head with a guy like Marwin. The other thing is I think AJ Hinch really wants to get him in that lineup. I remember him telling a story during the World Series. He said, you know, he decided, I got to get Marwin's bat in the lineup. So he called in Alex Bregman. He said, Alex, I got to get Marwin's bat in the lineup this game. So I put all of my infielders' names in a hat and I picked one out. And Alex said, you know, so you picked my name? And he said, no, I picked Altuve. So you're sitting today. You know, it's just, it tells you what Hinch thinks about him as a player. He loves his flexibility and he wants to keep him sharp with regular at bats. So I don't think you're that far off, JR. As far
if
as
he struggles, I think he can.
Somebody's got to be the high guy on him, you know? I mean, he had 450 at bats last year, and that's with not having a full time starting role. We're going into this year with him starting at first. I don't think there's any reason he can't have around 500.
Yeah, but
bats.
He's got a stroke. He was tied for the 15th highest hard hit percentage on liners in the league last year. Marwin Gonzalez, like, think about if you were coming into last year and I told you before the season started, Marwin is going to have the 15th highest hard hit percentage on liners. You probably would have had me institutionalized. And so that's what I'm saying. I want to see it again. Like, we were saying, you know, once we get rid of the juice balls or counter it, however we're going to do it, let's see what's left. But until that point in time, I'm not taking Marwin Gonzalez with a top, you know, 110 pick.
I know this is getting away from us and we're going on Marvin a lot, but for both of you, Colin and Evan, and even Mike, throw your two cents in. Are you Eric Hosmer guys at first base, or would you rather wait and get Marvin 30, 40?
Can I say
later?
Neither? If I get Hosmer, I'm not completely against getting Hosmer, but my roster construction has to need him. It has to have a Joey Gallo, a Kairos Davis, some huge power potential guys where I just need him to provide me with the average and a few RBIs and runs that he will.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to take Hosmer at a value, which I'm getting a lot of them this year. You know, I think I got him in the Invitational at 90th at the, you know, the 90-91 turn. So,
wouldn't you rather just wait and draft, like, I don't know, Carlos Santana, Josh Bell? Like, I understand the average might not be there, but I think the gains that you could potentially get in power could outweigh whatever, you know, ratio risk you're taking on there.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not too worried about his power. I think it's, you know, not the same as last year, but that's a conversation for another pod. All right, so after round one, I've got JR and Evan moving on.
Of course.
Colin, stick around. I'm going to mute you, and we'll bring you back in at the end to talk some Invitational.
Okay.
All right, JR and Evan, we're talking Paul DeJong. He's right there at the end of our range, coming in at 140. Where'd he go? 148. To 150 on NFBC ADP. Do either of you guys, I think Evan, I had you in the front. Do you have a side you want to take on the most recent Cardinal multi-million dollar man?
I mean, if I get to call my shot, I'll kind of be the anti-DeJong guy, if that pleases the court. It's very interesting when you kind of take a look at his entire season that he put together last year, the home road stuff. I mean, you kind of parse through that what you will. He hit 358 at home off of a 421 BABIP. Now, these were kind of small sample size sizes. On the road, he hit 231, and that's hitting 14 of his 25 bombs away from St. Louis. So imagine if kind of some of that power was rolled back and the balls aren't clearing the fence and kind of what that batting average could look at. The strikeout profile, I mean, is what it is with DeJong. I don't think a lot of people are, you know, really arguing that or think that's going to regress necessarily. As much as people like to talk about the St. Louis shuffle of, you know, players that could kind of get squeezed out, I think DeJong is kind of on the same wavelength as far as Matt Carpenter, as far as like guaranteed playing time in the lineup. Like, I don't think he's going to get pimped for a job by Colton Wong or Jed Jerko or anything like that. It was just a very weird season, and I don't necessarily know that I'd put the capital into DeJong. I'd rather go, you know, Orlando Arcia or Zach Cozart. So my own draft strategy doesn't include him. I'll close with the last line from his FanGraphs player cap from Keith Farnsworth, which I really loved. So using the 216 hitter sample of players that reached 400 plate appearances last year, 53 of them slugged over 500 last year, and only six of them did it with an average exit velocity under 87 miles per hour. Paul DeJong was on that list with Altuve, Zach Cozart, Scooter Jeanette, Eddie Rosario, and Charlie Blackman. So it's kind of a mixed bag, but the overall theme is he doesn't really barrel up the balls, and therefore the power may be due for a little bit of a regression. So given the opportunity, I will pass on Paul.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, there's plenty of worry there. You know, obviously, the Colton Wong comparison, right after he signed a big contract, he kind of disappeared. You know, he was supposed to be 2020 player in the bank and wasn't. You know, their outfield, they've had plenty of stuff go wrong. JR, what do you have on the flip side for DeJong?
So I'm actually a big Paul DeJong supporter. Ron Chandler actually turned me on to him with a couple of his tweets last year. He basically just talked about his second half. And if you look in the numbers of Paul's second half, he had an 883 OPS. That's over 100 points higher than his first half. I think this guy really was an early call up in May and settled into his role. And after he got about 200 plate appearances under his belt, he started to feel comfortable. Now, Chandler hasn't projected at 34 homers and 80 RBIs, batting 263. Those are a little high for me. I'd say maybe that 27 to 30 range for homers would even still be kind of high, but the kid's got pop. You got to remember, he wasn't even projected in the top 1,000 last year for ADP. So now to bump him all the way up to 150 is a large jump, but his contact percentage is great. His OPS is really high in the second half. At a 150 with dual position eligibility at second and short, I kind of like him in there.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of like the bottom of the tier for me at shortstop. If you miss out on the guys that are at the top, I feel like he's a pretty good cut above the next shortstops that you're going to get. You know, Arcia, I'm an Arcia fan, but I'm not ready to pay that price on him yet. Tim Anderson, you know, he's got counting stats, but he's got his whole suitcase full of problems. Jose Peraza, no thank you. Did that last year. Burned a draft pick on him. So yeah, that's definitely a case for DeJong. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if this is where he stays ADP wise, or if people start moving him up, moving him down as drafts roll out here.
I mean, if he's going to be hitting in front of Ozuna, I didn't mean to cut you off, Mike, but if he's going to be hitting in front of Ozuna and his power bats for the Cardinals, he's going to have some okay numbers. I mean, what are we really expecting? What are you thinking, Evan, since you're not liking him that much? What are you projecting him to do?
As far as what department? Just power? Just, I mean, are we talking batting
average?
Yeah,
kind of give me everything. What do you think he's going to do this year?
I mean, so obviously – you know, like I said, the home road stuff kind of is what it is. I believe he's one of the better power sources for like a middle infield spot once you get down this late. I agree that, you know, if you miss out on the top guys and you need somebody, this is, you know, somebody that I wouldn't feel terrible about, you know, putting a lottery ticket on him, maybe going nuts and hitting 30 home runs. I just think that the ability for, you know, a 33% strikeout rate that drops his batting average below 250. And then, you know, everything else kind of dries up and then he gets caught in that St. Louis shuffle. Like there's floor, but there's also, you know, ceiling in there, which I don't think a lot of these late guys have a ton of like overall ceiling when you look at the shortstops, as far as like blowing up and being, you know, top three at the position or anything like that, unless Jose Peraza goes out and steals 50 bases or Marcus Semien hits, you know, 30 home runs and steals 20 bases. So I mean, I think DeJong can actually be one of the guys this late that is going to really move the needle instead of just looking at all these guys that are like, maybe 15 candidates with decent batting average, which is kind of what it is at the shortstop pool after this point.
I mean, we realized Paul is still only 24 years old. He did have a batting average of 290 in the second half. Like, this is a guy who can do it. I feel like we get hyped up with the Albies and all the players like that, but this kid's still young, and he proved for a full season that he can hit dingers. I feel like 150 kind of is right around where he should be going.
You're not, are you worried about him getting figured out a second time around? Because he really didn't have, you know, he had 132 games at AA in 2016. Last year he played 48 games at AAA, a little less than 200 plate appearances, and he was up. And so, I mean, he doesn't have an extended minor league track record. Now, the batting average history for his minor league profile is, you know, a decent one. So when I talk about this floor of dropping out, I mean, it's not that he's ever really showed that he's, you know, a 230 hitter or anything like that. But I, when you look at kind of the outside metrics, I think you can see how things could go wrong for him.
They could. I mean, I could definitely see him, you know, fading back down to what he was, a top 1,000 prospect. But I'm not the team that just gave him a multi-million dollar contract. So there has to be something there where this franchise, this storied franchise, the Cardinals, who Matt Thompson loves so much and are so smart, thought that this guy was worth the money they gave him. His hitter profile can really pan out to be okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I think he's probably about right where he's at. You know, I think he belongs in the tier, but there's some question marks. All right. So to score it from round two, I got Evan moving on by a hair. Evan, you're our winner. JR, stick with us. We'll be right back with you.
Copy that.
All right, Evan. So as the winner of the round table, you get to tell us who you think is overvalued in this range.
Victory. Okay. All right. Yeah. So for an overrated guy in this tier, I mean, obviously there's some people we could definitely dogpile on. But I think everybody's kind of, you know, beaten the dead horse that is Jake Lamb and Trevor Story. So I'll kind of go an opposite way. And I missed my podcast this week with Ben Brennis and Ray Kuhn, where they were talking about outfielders. So if you like podcasts without me, go check that out. They did a very long talk about Ender Inciarte, which they did a much longer talk than I would have if I was on there. And I'm the resident Braves fan around here. Some of his invitational ADPs seemed really high to me as far as like, I'm not in for taking Ender Inciarte inside the top 100. I'm just not going to do it. There's other guys that could probably maybe not replicate the batting average that he does, but as far as, you know, some of the runs and the steal type stuff, I think you could find things that aren't exponentially worse at exponentially better prices than what Inciarte is doing. And let's be honest, last season was the first time he's played more than, I believe it's 135 games. So, you know, part of that was he was in Arizona and he was kind of caught in that outfield logjam that the Diamondbacks had for a little bit. Part of it was that he was hurt. But I do, you know, as far as being a productive bat, once again, you talk about if Freddie Freeman's going to be an MVP and blah, 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 these guys have to be good. I think he's a very good hitter and going to be a good fantasy asset. But like an 83 min pick in the Invitational is too rich for my blood.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like what he does as a player, but I'd much rather have him as my fifth outfielder than my third. You know, at the range he's going, and he's your second or third outfielder. There's guys much later that do what he does and could give you upside in some other categories.
I mean, I know, you know, Adam Eaton's a little dinged up, but if people are going to be giving us the Adam Eaton discount, you know, it's a better lineup and he could probably give you the exact same stats. And if you're going to get him at around 140 and not have to go 110 for Inciarte, you know, why not? Why wouldn't you take a flyer on, you know, if somebody gets hyped on a Delano DeShields? I mean, both guys, Inciarte is not going to overwhelm you with power, his steals and batting average. And if you can kind of take the batting average hit on DeShields and get, you know, 15 more stolen bases out of it, if, you know, DeShields has a positive season, better return on your draft investment. Like, there's just other ways to go instead of, like, don't get me wrong, I'm all for guys that are going to hit 300 outside of, you know, the top 100 overall, but I just need a little more from Inciarte.
Exactly. All right, so I'm going to bring everybody back in, and we'll wrap up with a little bit of invitational talk. So I'm unmuting everybody right now. All right, so you guys are all in the invitational, and we're mostly getting done here. There's a few drafts still going on, so if you're still in progress, just pick a player you like. But what I want to know from everybody is, who do you think your best value is going to be from a standpoint of, you know, let's say this was an auction, and you paid a dollar price for the player you drafted. Who do you think is going to provide the best increase in fantasy dollars? So Colin, if you're there, hit us off.
Yeah, so I actually co-own a team with Ben Brennis, who Evan mentioned a little bit earlier, with FWFB. I joined FWFB 2 days after the deadline for the Invitational, so Ben was nice enough to pick me up as a stray dog and let me co-own a team with him. So we had the second overall pick in League 8, and a couple guys that we got really good values on, I think. So the player that we think we got the best value on was Eugenio Suarez. He's going real late. We got him in the 13th round, and they're doing everything they can with Nick Senzel, the top prospect, to get him up to the majors to play, but it doesn't look like they want him to play third base because they have Suarez locked in there. So getting him in the 13th round provided us with great home runs, I think decent runs and RBIs and a decent average as well, and it really hit our team.
He's definitely a forgotten man. Like, he broke onto the scene a few seasons ago and was a great value for people, and he's kind of just continued providing it. And I think you're right on Senzel. They're playing around with him at third and short, and that's going to take time. And I'm not sure they're eager to start the service time clock either. So, I think even when he does come up, Suarez probably has a job.
Yeah, he's a good prospect, but like I said, they're trying to get Suarez's bat stay in the lineup, and that lineup is definitely going to improve this year. I think Hamilton being on the base paths, Votto being Votto, Duvall providing the great corners and everything. So getting him in the 13th value would be great for our team.
Yeah, and they weren't a bad offense last year. It was more the pitching that was their problem. But all right, so Evan, you're in the Invitational, correct?
Yes, I am. We actually just finished our draft today, which was phenomenal.
All right, so who do you think is going to give you the most fantasy dollar value?
The most fantasy dollar value on my team? Well, everybody, because I drafted them, and there's a reason that I love them.
And they know that, and they're going to play hard for you.
Hopefully. A couple of my later guys, like you said, getting them for a buck. I drafted Nick Delmonico from the White Sox, who had injury scare with his shoulder over the weekend. A lot of the early stuff says that it's probably looking a lot more optimistic than initially thought. I think getting him for a buck, he's kind of a fan favorite out here for the White Sox. And I was really interested in what he did at the end of last year. I also took Hernan Perez, just so I can make Chuck happy and tell him that I drafted a Brewer. Perez is kind of the super utility guy of the Brewers, who a lot of people are on the train of being good this year. There's talk that he could potentially pip John VR for a second base job. Who knows? We'll see. Once again, Ryan Braun is not the most durable person in the world. Things happen, and you could mess around and get playing time. And the last guy would be Austin Hedges, who was my catcher. I kind of just punted on catcher. I got him at 386 in the 26th round. If the swing adjustments continue from last year and he can maintain the power and the batting average becomes some semblance of, not – detrimental to my team, then he's going to far outproduce the price that I paid for him. So,
yeah, I've been picking Hedges up everywhere I can early this preseason. He's hitting home runs left and right, so people are starting to take note. So I'm not getting the same discounts I was on him, but yeah, a lot of best ball shares of Hedges for me. And then JR, who do you think on your Invitational team is going to give you nice value?
I got two guys on the hook at 21 and 22, 311th overall, then 320th overall. I got Pujols and Jorge Soler. I'm pretty excited about both of them. I have them slated to be both on my util. Pujols, a lot of people talk about he can get those 100 RBIs still. Hell, if he gets me 80 to 90, I'll be happy. He's just a steady player who have a lot of playing time on a good lineup. And you're getting him in the 300s. I mean, that's a great deal, especially in a deep league like this. And Jorge Soler's always had this potential. The Cubs thought it forever. He never had full playing time. He went to KC last year, still had some at-bats, but not full playing time. And to get him at 320 overall, where he's going to see 500 to 600 ABs this year, let's really see if the kid can do it. I'm excited to see. As my second util, it's somebody that if it doesn't work out, I can flip and get another player in there off waivers. But as far as I go, those two are pretty excited for me.
Yeah.
I like those two picks, Jay. They're great.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, with Jorge Bonifacio being suspended 80 games now, Soler definitely is going to get full run. And then for myself, the two guys that I'm hoping to get some nice value out of, I got Jason Kipnis in the 15th. That was just as he was starting to hit, you know, all those home runs. I think he's showing he's healthy. He's a nice power speed combo for me in the middle infield position. And then I got Alex Reyes in the 20th. And, you know, my starting pitching strategy was to get them late and to take some chances, which he definitely is. But my feeling on Reyes is they start him in the bullpen, and around June, July, they transition him into the rotation, because he's got to get, you know, 120, 130 innings in this year if they want him to be a starter next year. So, you know, it's giving him 60 innings out of the bullpen doesn't do anything for his career. And I think they're going to have an eye towards making him a starter. But that's all the time we got today, guys. Thanks for joining me. Real quick, everybody on Twitter, again, Colin is CWeatherwax13. Evan is EVFWFB. And JR is JohnRussell215. So check everybody out on Twitter. Quick plug for Friends with FantasyBenefits.com. Lots of articles coming out on there every day. Podcasts coming up, you know, multiple podcasts out each week. And the FWFB draft guide is available for purchase. You can get it on Amazon. Get it in 2 days if you're a Prime member. You know, for me, there's something about having a paper draft guide in your hands that's just great. You know, we get so dependent on technology, and in the middle of a draft, unless it's a slow draft, like, you don't have time to find the web page, to Google what you want. Like, you need pen and paper. You need to be able to flip to that page. You're looking for a shortstop. All right, let me go to the shortstop section. You know, let me dog ear a couple pages that are player profiles I like. So definitely check that out. It's a really good price. Justin Mason wanted to, you know, basically outprice the market and just get this thing in people's hands to improve their teams. So think about that if you're looking for a draft guide. But all right, thanks for being with me, guys, and take care.